The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Now, sitting in front of me is Debbie Deegan. How are you doing, Debbie?
I'm great, thank you very much.
I'd say you're a huggy person.
I am definitely a huggy person and I find the whole non-huggy thing hard. Yes. We're all doing it anyway, kind of. You really have to stop yourself.
You do?
Yeah, yeah, you really do.
And I love the handshake of it. Yeah. Slow to come to it, but I think it's lovely.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so we sort
I just came across the city today and I just can't believe there's hardly a car in the city, which is just the weirdest thing in the middle of the day.
Like in Dublin?
Right. Yeah, mad.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Not at all, a pleasure.
Now, you set up From Russia With Love.
That's right, a long time ago.
And then children...
Two children with love.
Exactly. To Russia With Love and then to Children With Love. And you're back in the news because you got an award from Vladimir Putin.
That's right. Indeed, I did.
What's the name of the award?
It's called the Order of Friendship, which is the highest award you can get in Russia. It's given always by the president and it's given only to foreigners by him.
Right.
For work they're doing internally in Russia.
Okay. And the work you've been doing for the last 20 years.
I have.
Okay. And it started with Chernobyl in a way.
Well, Chernobyl bring in kids every summer, thousands of them. Well, they used to. I don't think there's as many of them coming in now, but there was at the time. And we took children in, and along with half where I live. I mean, they were in a lot of houses at the time. And I went back to Russia then to meet one of the children.
Because you'd made a promise.
That was the beginning of the story. Well, no, not because I'd made... When I went back to the orphanage, I met a little girl in the orphanage, which was a different child, actually. And the day I was leaving, I had her in my arms. I've told the story.
This Sasha?
This is Sasha, exactly. Okay, and right. So she was in my arms the day I was leaving, after a week there. And she said to me that she had never been kissed before. And she was 12 at the time. And I made a promise then. And I said to her, well, look... Like, I had a very ordinary life. I'm a very ordinary person. I intended to go to Russia once and never be... It wasn't my intention to go back. And I made a promise to her that I'd come back. I felt that the least I could do was that, you know. But to be honest, really, the whole thing I found quite overwhelming, to walk into an orphanage it was 1998 now. And at that time, it was going to PC to endorse orphanages. I wouldn't do it now.
Right.
In fact, I'm doing the opposite. I'm banging the drums to close them down. Okay. But then I was
PC. And just a bit of history and a bit of context. So 1986 was Chernobyl.
Yeah.
And were these children as a result of Chernobyl? No,
no. Not at all. No. These children were a result of the crash in 1998, really, in Russia.
Okay.
So, and really post-communism, post-perestroika.
So what sort of stories did they have then? What sort of stories did they have?
Ray, really, like our own children that were in institutions here, a lot of them were social orphans. And so really alcohol was a huge problem then. And so in Russia, if your parents are alcoholics or drug addicts, rather than leave the children with them, they take them off them and they put them into an estate institution to raise them.
Right.
Our own were a bit the same 50 years ago. They were in for different reasons. Some of them had parents. A lot of them had parents here as well. So, but very broken places, the orphanages. And when I walked through the gates the first time, like, I was completely just not prepared for hundreds of children that could have looked like my own.
Mm.
And other than the place was a crumbling mess. And these magnificent children were in the middle. We didn't do babies then, so the children we started with were six up. Some of them were bigger than, taller than me, very aggressive, the older ones, because they'd been institutionalized all their lives. The whole thing completely, like, when I say mesmerized me, I was mesmerized by the whole thing.
And were they sleeping in dormitories?
They were sleeping in huge dormitories, yeah. You'd have like 40 or 50 beds kind of wedged together, and the children were at the time, like, it sounds very negative now, and things have changed, and Putin has changed it, along with all of us, you know. But at the time, yeah, there was like shaved heads, and they'd never seen a toothbrush, and there was a lot of bruises, and there was a lot of...
Any education?
Oh my gosh, yes, because Russians are obsessed with education. So even then, the education, to be honest with you, is too hard for children in orphanages, because... You know, if you meet any Russians, they can all speak four or five languages and they're all unbelievably academic. The scientists, the, you know, astronauts, etc. But, I mean, they're amazingly academic. So they were, in a way, and still to this day, the academia is too hard for the children because it's set at a level for family children, not for orphan children.
Okay. So you have to deal with other issues before you... start to teach them how to read and write, etc.?
Well, we didn't have to worry about the academia. I mean, those kids can stand in front of you and chant like 40 verses of a poem, okay, and they could be 8 years old. Whereas, we, you know, it was incredible. But no, we had bigger issues. Like at the time, for me, I didn't. That wasn't something we'd even think about. I was more concerned about the fact that they'd never brushed their teeth, they'd never seen their own reflection in a mirror, they'd never seen a photograph of themselves. They were, you know, they just had no confidence.
And you know, we have this image of Russia, state run, and you've used that term already, state run.
Yes.
So how do you then, as an Irish woman, going over for one visit, manage to get into the system so that you can run your own orphanage?
So it's not my own orphanage. Yeah, it's still a state orphanage. I had to wriggle my way into the state system. And the only reason I did that was because we were non-political and we were non-religious. So in a way, we were non-threatening. You know, we weren't screaming for human rights. We went in initially and made promises to 250 children initially. I suppose the team that I had around me were amazing people. And I brought in brilliant experts with me that taught me how to make changes. I mean, when I saw it initially and the place was decrepit, Dickensian, you know, desperate, I didn't know where to start. Now, what I can do is I always see where I want to go. I have no idea how I'm going to get there, but I always see the end picture. Some people are the opposite. They see all the bits in the middle and they don't see the end picture. But I know how to get to the end picture. I know what I see.
What the end picture is, yeah.
So I had a vision from day one that because it was the worst place I'd ever seen, I had this picture in my head from day one that I wanted it to be the most magnificent place that you could possibly give children. So we went nuts and did that for the first 10 years.
You'll have to talk me through, because there was somebody running that.
State.
Yeah, but there was...
There were scary big people.
But there was a person in charge when you arrived. Yeah.
We had him removed in the first 3 months because, for different reasons, but because the place was in an awful state. And they welcomed... We had a governor at the time. There's governors in every region of Russia. And I presented myself to the governor and said, look, we're prepared to come back again and again and again, but you're going to have to give me a green light.
Okay.
And so we shook hands and... He gave me a green light. And within 5 years, I was on a board overseeing maybe 5,000 children. And we were making serious strategic changes to their lives.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, it was, yeah. But, you know, if you're diplomatic and you're respectful and you're not condescending and you don't, you know, like we had to get in and learn literally from the ground up how to do it. Because I didn't know Russia. I didn't know Russian. I was, and Russians... they can look terrifying and they're scary people unless you get to know them, and then they're amazingly wonderful and warm. But initially they're frosty. They're you know, we're foreigners to them and we look like we've money back then. They didn't look like they had money, and so they're, you know, they're on the back foot from that point of view.
And of course, if you go back to Ireland and tell the story of children with shaved heads in orphanages,
yes,
it's not putting out a good picture of
Russia.
It's
not, and I had to be very careful of that because I have huge respect for the Russians, and I had to be very careful not to offend them in any way because I knew them all here. I knew the guys here, I knew the guys in Russia, and also I'm getting visas all the time and they're all very nice to me. And I wanted, and diplomacy is part of it for us, you know, so I know the embassies in both worlds, and I know the Russians very well, and so they trusted me. And I never would have let them down, and I still wouldn't to this day because I see how hard they work to make the changes themselves.
Mm.
So they knew, and they still know to this day that I wouldn't let them down.
So Sasha says to you that you've never been kissed.
Yes.
And that was that light bulb moment.
That was a light bulb moment for me. Yeah,
it changed your life, and it changed the lives of thousands of children in Russia subsequently.
It was that moment. I read a book last year, Elizabeth Gilbert wrote it, The Big Magic it's called. And in it, she describes moments like that in your life that come at you, you know, and you can decide to go with them and let it change your life. Or you can decide to walk away from a moment like that and think, hold on, this is too big for me. You know,
and
this
where
is going
are you
to...
at in your life? What age were your children?
My children were small at school. I was an at-home mom. You know, we weren't rich or anything. Like I was just about able to stay at home. Back in the day when you could. You couldn't now.
Mm.
And it hit me like a train. And I just thought, okay. I telephoned home to Patricia McGrath, one of the girls who's still by my side. She was in the Kremlin with me last year for the medal. And I said, look, we're going to have to do something. We just can't leave these children here. It's minus 34. The snow is a metre high. You're in a forest 3 or 4 hours from the nearest town. We cannot leave these children here. I mean, they had there was a, like tamed rats in their beds, which we that was the one thing that freaked me out more than anything. We're in the middle of a forest. Like it was something from, for me, it was like something from a horror movie at the time. Mm. And we decided, okay.
And what about the smells?
Yeah, that was a big problem.
Yeah.
That is a big problem because you've got all our children were bedwetters because you've no lights in corridors, you've no working toilets. So therefore, children, it's easier to wet your bed than it is to go down to a broken right. toilet with no light if you're 3 or 4 or 5 years of age or 15 years of age for that matter. So bed wetting is always a problem in an institution. And children have no confidence and they have no mammy and daddy tucking them in at night time. You know, so when you don't have that, those sort of things like bedwetting are a problem. So we felt we could take it on. And I had an amazing crew of people around me. And I still have the same crew around me after 21 years of unbelievable band of angels around me. Mm. And we're still there. And we still do have orphanages. But they have taken... At the time, there was 850,000 orphans.
In Russia?
Yeah, at the time.
What's now, the population? I should know off the top of my head.
150 million people.
Right, okay.
And now we're down to about 100,000 orphans. So they are working. It was a huge problem they inherited from post-communism world. It was a huge problem. And they're working through it. But it's very difficult to change the system. Look at our own. Look at the mess of our own system here, Ray. Yeah. I mean, at times I was cringing out there when I'd be reading the reports here of what was going on. And there was me pontificating about how we should be doing it out there when I was looking at what happened in our own country, which we're also deeply ashamed of.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
So I suppose you described in your TED talk looking up at an Everest for you. And when you decide to do something like that, that's one thing. But to actually make real change is another thing. And at times it must have been nearly impossible. Were there times where you went, I'm going back to Dublin now and I'm just going to stay there?
Not really. I like big, huge challenges like that. And I had people around me that were all unbelievably strong about stuff like that. And because we went so often at the time that the kids do kind of light your fires, light your totally. And then extraordinary things happen out there all the time, like mental things. Like I was at dinner one night and I said to the guy beside me, like, so what do you do? Posh dinner I was at one night out there. And he said, I'm an astronaut. And I was going, oh my God, like, where the hell do you ever hear anything like that, you know? And so you've mad moments like that. Now, as it happened, then I started a program called Reaching for the Stars in the Orphanage. And he came in and he spoke to the children about his journey to Mir and all that. And it was mad stuff. But we also did very basic, like we did everything. We really decided at a very early stage, we were rebuilding the place at one point and it was going to be the most beautiful orphanage ever. But at an early stage, we decided we were going to rebuild every child in it. And that's really what we did.
Yes. Yeah. And how do you go about rebuilding a child who's broken? And you've used that word already.
They were broken. And they definitely are. I mean, children that are taken away from their parents like that and are institutionalised are broken children. There's no doubt about it. Respect was something that we brought in and we told them all, like the Irish are fabulous at the whole business of telling them they're beautiful. And
what's the Russian
love
for you are beautiful?
Well, it's Ti Prekrasna, which is we used again and again. Ti Prekrasna.
Okay.
And we used it again and again and again. And the kids just rose to it and they grew like flowers. I'm not joking you. Like when we came in, they had shaved heads. We stopped the shaving of the heads. They were miserable, sad, lonely children. We are still with the same children 21 years later, along with thousands more, but magnificent, magnificent children. And we built, we really, as a team of people, we built their confidence. That was probably the biggest thing we did. And now my goal was to get them to normal, but actually we got them much further than normal. None of our statistics are off the scale from the point of view. None of ours have put their children back into institutions. None of ours have been to prison. We may have one or two. There's no point in saying none. But over the years, like 80% of Russian children at the time were going back into prison for drugs, drink, all
these
sorts of stuff.
These are institutionalized children, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They don't have a good future in general after 15 years in an old institution. But ours are off the scale successful children. Magnificent. Now, moms, dads, doctors, teachers, nurses. Mm. I mean, unbelievable success.
What about them looking for their parents? Is that an aspect of something you do?
We did that, yeah. So it took us about 5 or 6 years to find all their brothers and sisters. They didn't have parents. In a lot of cases, the parents were alcoholics. Alcohol was a problem in the country at the time. And so we searched for parents if we could find them. Some of them we did find. Some of them it wasn't a good idea to find them. A lot of grannies were still around because the grannies weren't the alcoholics. The younger generation were. And so we reunited them where we could with grandmothers or brothers and sisters, which were in distance or in orphanages. So it took us about 7 years to find all the brothers and sisters. So we put the whole lot of them back together. We couldn't bring them back together because there was too many of them. But we put the pieces of their life back together as best we could.
So as well as respect and telling them they were beautiful and obviously hugging and kissing,
yes,
and all those positive,
yes,
things.
Yes.
What else helps to rebuild a broken life?
It was, for us, it was a huge tapestry. Like, we had unbelievable volunteers from Ireland going in to live there for about 15 years.
To do things like what? Psychological
support. Play the guitar all day, right, knitting, right, sewing, walking in the forest, minding them. Endless love. It really, without sounding cheesy, it was just endless positivity and endlessly telling them that they were wonderful. And then we put in extracurricular classes if they wanted to be, no matter what they wanted to be, we felt they could be it. Okay. And then also when they left the orphanage at 15 and 17, we then started a program.
Where did they go at 15?
They fell off the edge of the cliff traditionally.
Okay.
Whereas we then set up a program here, funded by Irish, and we put them onto a leavers programme. So they all went into flats, into hostels, and we supported them right through colleges.
Right. 15 seems very, very young to
be
going out there.
In general, children institutions do leave at 15 and 16 because they're not able for the academic system. So they do fall off the edge. But we were pushing them to stay till the leaving cert as such.
So you would like a world without orphanages? Well, that's, you know, I suppose most people would.
Yeah, yeah, we will get that. We are getting that. I mean, at the moment, there's a problem in the world because there's so many more displaced children now because of all the current trouble, which
Syria.
We didn't. Yeah, exactly. So many displaced children. But we are definitely working on a world there, definitely in Russia, where we're going to be without orphanages, which I did say to Vladimir Putin when I was talking to him, that that is my goal before I retire.
So what? You find families for them?
They'll go back. A lot of them are gone back into this. Yeah, foster families is one thing. Adoption is another thing. We don't do adoption. We never have. But Russians themselves adopt and fostering. But fostering is a big, difficult thing to pull off. I mean, it's a very difficult thing with so many children. But I did say to him, that's exactly what we need to see in Russia without. Every child needs a family, really, is what we're saying.
So you got a phone call from the Kremlin. It sounds like I was in the supermarket and I got a phone call from the Kremlin. It sounds like it's a start of a joke.
Yes.
But it wasn't a joke. And that's how you found out you were getting this medal.
Yes. And so I was invited in and my daughter was getting married in Connemara on the Friday. So we had to get to the Kremlin for the Sunday. And so two of us went in, Trish and myself, and it was an unbelievable experience for like ordinary Irish folk, you know, and kind of this stunning kind of James Bond looking girl standing at a presidential car at the airport took us to Putin's private hotel. And we were obviously conscious that it was his private hotel and we were kind of, you know, very
when you say
conscious.
Private, what do you mean?
Well, nobody's allowed. It's totally secure.
It's just
totally
him,
secure.
Him and his guests.
No, well, just his guests. Guests of the president stay there.
Right. Which is a state-owned hotel.
Yes.
Right.
Very Soviet, very, you know, severe, you know. And but like great crack for us, really. You know, we were so kind of giddy about it. And then
how was your room like?
Unbelievable. I had like the penthouse looking out over the Moscow River with the most magnificent statue outside my window, and the whole thing was like absolutely overwhelmingly mad, you know. And
the contrast between that and your first experience.
Well, you see,
the orphanage.
Exactly. Like when and in the Kremlin, the same thing. Like it's not my world. It's not my. Give me the orphanage kitchen any day, you know. But at the same time, if you're going to make change,
you have to put yourself out there.
You absolutely do.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So, and then you arrive in and it's a big do, which has been televised.
It's a big do, which has been televised. And it's about 120 million people. And I was brought up the front of the room.
That's the number of people who are watching it, not who are at it. Yeah.
No, it was televised.
Televised,
so around the world. And it's a big event in Russia. And
To your left is.
To my left is the Patriarch, which is the Pope, their Pope. There's a table of eight at the front. And I had no idea who was going to be sitting beside me or at my table. And so the Pope was to my left, or as they call him, the
Russian Pope.
With like big diamonds and his hat and beauty, you know, all the garb.
Yeah.
And I'm not a religious person. So I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, dinner with the Pope. What do you talk about? So I did kind of knock back a shot of vodka to try and cope with the conversation. And I just about said to him, do you speak English? And I'm Irish, blah, blah. And then I was tipped on the shoulder by a big security man with the wire down his neck to say that my host was standing waiting to be introduced to me on my right. So I look up and it is Vladimir Putin.
Now, I'm going to stop you there. And we might have to keep you over 4 o'clock, if that's OK. Debbie Deegan is still with us. That's sad news, isn't it?
Yeah. Horrendous. And put chills down all our spines now for that.
Yes.
And terrible for the family.
Yeah, that's a mother, a granny, a sister. So our thoughts are with them. Now, Putin, so you're there and you're introduced and he's standing beside you. And here's a man you've seen bare-chested on horseback and in all sorts of...
I haven't seen him personally bare-chested on horseback.
Which you've seen him in photographs.
Yes, I have indeed.
Yeah. So what was that like for you?
It was, I suppose, initially you do... I blanked completely because I forgot my own name literally because I was thinking, oh my God, like, you know, what do you talk to him about, you know? And I kind of said, like, in a panicky way to the big, huge, giant fella, security guy, like, what am I going to talk to him about? And he said something like, well, you could discuss foreign affairs in your own country. And I was thinking, I didn't even know the foreign affairs minister. I was thinking, who's the foreign affairs minister? I couldn't think of anything. Anyway, he did take the seat beside me and I had him for 2.5 hours. He was my dinner date.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what went through your head? Like, have you read stuff about him that maybe you didn't agree with?
Much.
Right.
So then but then I've probably read stuff about an awful lot of people that I don't agree with either. Okay. So I mean, and also,
but you're a diplomat, and that's
important. It's not my job to talk to. You know, at the end of the day, when you meet somebody like that, it is good. It is good to talk. You know, no matter what, it's good to talk. And I have views on the children, and that's what I was able to talk to him about. I'm not a political animal, and I'm not not religious, so I wasn't going to get into any sort of stuff with them about.
So what did you chat about then? What did you chat about?
Well, I suppose, like, I'm a chatterer anyway, and there was a magnificent big concert on a beautiful big stage, and it was kind of Riverdance Russian style, you know, with like opera singers and ballerinas and everything beautiful about Russia. And he just talked me through the whole thing.
In English?
He speaks multiple languages. Right. And I was terrified he'd ask me about, because they are all poets over there, and I was terrified he'd ask me about poetry in Ireland. I was thinking, who did I do in school? Patrick Kavanagh was the only name I could even think of. And Pat Inglesby, who lives beside me in Glentara. I was thinking, oh my God. But he was easy. I mean, if I was at dinner with you for 2.5 hours, I wouldn't be telling anybody what I said to you either.
No, you wouldn't. That's fair enough.
So I'm not going to obviously discuss everything.
But I'm not the president of one of the biggest countries in the world.
No, but he's a diplomat. And he was very, he was charming. He was unbelievably patient with me and in my endless questions.
Is he tall, small?
He was the very same height as I am.
Okay.
So I was looking at him.
5'4"?
Yeah, I'd say 5'6" probably.
Okay, 5'6",
blue eyes looking piercingly at but very pleasant, easy, very, very welcoming, incredibly grateful for what the Irish have done for the children, which was lovely just for me to hear that. I'm not going to be raving. I mean, I can only tell you how I found it, Ray.
That's fair enough.
I wasn't going to start bringing up big issues at the table that I didn't agree with, because I'm in the middle of the Kremlin surrounded by security that you've never seen anything like. He did invite me up onto
the stage. It might have been silly.
Yeah. It might have been foolish, but he did invite me up onto the stage to make a speech, and which I hadn't really prepared for, but I was very happy to do it. And I did kind of wag the finger slightly and say that I wanted him to make sure that I would be there for the final closure of the final orphanage, and that I wanted him to carry through on his promises that he would do that for the children. And he was extremely pleasant to me. And that's a beautiful medal, and I'm very proud of it.
Okay, congratulations again.
Thank you.
So Rising Tide Project is an Irish project.
Yeah, we started that 4 years ago, and we had so much experience in Russia with children. And with running the charity and with fundraising and with the whole, shooting gallery. So we were approached by a Desh school in Dublin. And so we were working with children, and we went and had a look at one project there. We were going to just dabble a little bit and help them out with the particular project. And like everything, when you start, you're inclined to get immersed. Well, we are anyway. And we set up a programme here called the Rising Tide Project. It's under the banner of To Children With Love, and a team of us got together, and we work with children that have a lot of challenges in their lives. And we set up all sorts of programmes around it, like Dragon's Den kind of thing. We've a Mammy's programme, and we've got now we have a magnificent scholarship programme, and we have about 49 children on it at the moment. Initially, when we set it up, we had money for about 10 of them, and we had very high standards as to what we wanted them to tick the boxes before they could go on the scholarship programme, and 50 of them put their hands up to go on it, and we thought, OK, let's do this thing. So, yeah, very successful, beautiful programme.
You did a very good TED Talk, which I watched over lunch
Thank
today.
Thank you.
It was a lot more appealing than my lunch, I can tell you.
Thank you.
You did it in front of 1,000 people in London.
Yeah, about 1,700 people. 1,700 people. On about four layers. But it was definitely terrifying.
And people want to hear your story because you've achieved so much. You know, from sitting at your kitchen table.
Well, it was from my kitchen table to the Kremlin table. They liked the idea of that, that the TEDx people liked that idea. And that's kind of what was the hook, rather than me talking about orphanages, which kind of people can glaze over at, you know, charity, here we go again. It was more the kind of thing of getting to the Kremlin table. So, yeah, it was a terrifying experience, actually. And I like talking and I love stages and I love getting our message out there. And I love talking about how you achieve big goals and all that. But it was definitely, I think maybe because I was in the UK and I kind of thought the other 11 doing it with me were all English, and I was thinking I'm the only Irish one, and if I make a mess of this, my 35 came with me on the plane, I was thinking I'm going to let everybody down if I make a mess of this.
And it's just the whole TED Talk thing. It's been sort of raised up so high.
Yes, I know. It got inside my head, I think, that it was so, because I've been watching TED Talks for years, I was knee knocking for me, definitely.
Well, you did well.
Thank you. Yeah, I did.
There was no sense of you being nervous.
Yeah, at one stage through it, I did lose my train of thought. And
are you not allowed autocue or prompters? No.
They did advise me to bring notes on because I'd made a mess of my, you know, when you have to
your
do
rehearsal.
It in advance of my rehearsal. Yeah. I made a mess of that. And because they did it over Skype, and I was totally intimidated by these kind of English people sitting watching me, and I thought, oh. And so they advised her to bring notes because they didn't think I'd get through it. So it's 18 minutes of no notes. So no, there was no auto cue. To be honest, I loved it.
Loved
every second.
It's up
Thank
there.
You.
If you put in Debbie Deegan and TED Talk, you'll see that. And to Children with Love, you can find out more about the work you do in Russia and Ireland.
Thank you, yes.
And you're also out there and you're offering your story to people.
I am, yeah. I'm doing talks now, and I'm supposed to be on LinkedIn in London next week. They'd booked me to do a talk, but they've just cancelled because they're cancelling everything.
Yes.
But yes, I'm available to do talks. We've a lovely message, and we've a great message for corporates anyway, because, you know, I mean, we've got through so many obstacles in our years, and we've, you know, kept a team together for 21 years. I love talking about it.
It's been a real pleasure to meet you.
You too.
Oh, no, we can't shake hands.
No, we can't. I'll blow you a kiss.
Debbie, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ray. That was lovely. Thank you.
Thank